I like funny women.
Yeah, you know, why wouldn't you? And it always baffles me for people who are put off by them, and why?
I don't know, but we have someone who could maybe answer that question.
That's why you're here, John.
Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, best-selling author, life coach, parenting expert, and a parent.
Yes.
And your book is The Available Parent, and it's really great. And really, I think we've moved up where, you know, men and women are equal in a lot of ways in people's minds, but a lot of guys like their women to be hot and not really funny.
it's an intimidation factor. Is that what it is?
I think so. You know, I think there's been this like renaissance in comedy for women. You know, I think certain women made it undeniable. Your Tina Fey's and your Amy Poehler's in the last like 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think there is an intimidation factor. And I think it was a whole area here in Chicago in particular, where I think men felt like they really owned that whole milieu. And every once in a while, when I saw improv groups back in, you know, 20 years ago, there was one woman kind of a token just because we need a mom or a sister or a girlfriend. And now I feel like there are some really, really funny women, and there's no denying it. And that's part of it is like, well, okay, we can't really pretend this isn't happening
because
there's this renaissance going on.
And the bottom line is you feel better when you laugh, because doesn't that create endorphins that go to your brain that make you feel better? So who cares who's making you laugh? Just laugh.
As long as someone's doing it.
Right. Laugh with left. That's your bumper sticker.
That's so true. John, several topics. What would you like to start with today?
One thing I've noticed in the last few months is that I'm getting calls in the morning, like early in the, before I even get to work, saying, Dr. Duffy, we have this urgency going on at home. We've got a real problem.
Sorry about all those calls.
That's okay, Wendy.
Although we haven't had those calls anymore, there have been some.
Right, but you know what I'm talking about, that this can happen. And it got me thinking, like, a lot of us have this kind of culture of crisis in our homes from the beginning of the day, you know, where it's like, you know, we can't get them out of bed. We can't get them to school. The homework's not done. Things aren't organized. And I've been thinking about, like, I wonder how we can set a different tone in our homes from the beginning of the day, whether it means like how we talk to each other, the space we create and how we use the space, but to be a little more thoughtful about how we use home so that we're not running into crisis. Because I got to tell you, more and more often, that's what I'm running into, is this crisis from the beginning of the day, and the same families call. So it's pretty consistent, and it's really hard to kind of shake and get out of.
So just to reiterate, what the call is usually consisting of is, my child just doesn't feel like getting out of bed today, doesn't want to go to school, it just doesn't feel like today is going to be a good one and needs to stay in bed. That's the call?
That happens a lot. Or it might be, you know, he's not going to go to soccer after school and we're already arguing about that. Or, you know,
why is that coming up in the morning?
Right. Well, it seems
although
like
I'm guilty of it, you know, because I run down like, all right, here's what we have today. It's school, then it's CCD, then it's HeroClix. And maybe I shouldn't do that. In fact, my younger son, Dylan, said, I have, he didn't use this word, but I found out what it is, anticipatory anxiety, because I totally have it. I don't like things hanging over my head. So Dylan just said to me, tell me what I have to do when I have to do it, and then I'm not going to worry about it. Pretty smart.
What a great, like, regulatory move, right? Because there's a fine line between anticipatory anxiety and really good planning, because I get why you take that moment, because morning is sometimes the only time we're all there, right? So it's like, okay, how's today going to go? And if there's not a little space, a little time, because sometimes we just get up and we're like, okay, everybody has to hurry up and go, you know?
Right.
But if there was a little bit of time, you could have that discussion and it could be calm. It could be like, okay, so what do you have going on today? What do I have going on today? How do we mesh this all together? And I suppose in an ideal world, maybe we do that yesterday, like last
night. Or get up earlier.
Yes. Yep.
Because that is when that starts your day, and so regularly there are fights in the morning.
Yep. And it can set a tone that I'm finding can ruin an entire day. Yep. Like the kids I see at 10 o'clock in the morning are often kids where we crashed and burned and ran into a family crisis, and now here we are kind of like trying to undo it, you know, and it's the task for the day instead of everyone going off and just having a productive, happy day. It's like starts unhappy and stressed.
Can I ask just a question? And I mean this sincerely.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of people, would you say there's a majority of people that have the old Beaver Cleaver days where it's like, here's your lunch, honey, have a great day at school, give me a kiss, and then they're out the door? I don't know that that's the majority anymore. I think it's like you're sending the kids off stressed out because you've just been arguing about something.
I think it's way more that. I think it's way more the latter, where there's a lot of stress in homes in the morning that sets the tone for the day. And that suddenly has my attention, Bill. You asked a good question at the outset, because I realize more and more and more last few months, last couple of years, that's been what I'm talking about between, you know, 8 o'clock and noon to a lot of people. It's like trying to kind of like regroup from an early morning crisis.
Yeah. And that's not always the easiest thing to bounce off of, but I'm trying to figure out, one of the suggestions is maybe get up a little bit earlier. Couldn't that add to the stress? Because then you're operating on less sleep. I wonder if that's a good
school
way to
should start at noon for teenagers. Haven't there been studies that show that? I mean,
really sound research suggests like maybe not noon, but
yeah, all right.
10:30. Yeah, I mean that their rhythms work very differently than ours,
right.
And to start them at 7 or 8 is
crazy.
It's doing them a disservice, right?
I would have been a Rhodes Scholar if school started at 11 or 12.
No kidding, right?
Even 10 o'clock would make that extra hour in the morning, or extra two would be a savior to many families, and grades would go up.
I think that's right.
How do we do this?
I don't know. We should start some kind of movement here, right?
John Duffy is here. If your kids aren't in school yet, don't worry. They have 45 more minutes before they're due. We've changed the law. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Less than 10 years ago, the iPhone changed everything, but is it time for a reboot? See where smartphones go from here. That's Thursday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Bill, I thought of you the other day because I saw all over everyone's Facebook feeds that Barack Obama, his oldest daughter, Malia, is taking a gap year. Now, I thought of you because you told me one of your daughters did that, Kylie.
Mm-hmm.
And I, honest to God, had never heard that term before. And I thought, oh, she's just going to work at Gap for a year at the Gap, make some money, and pay for college.
Right.
All right. That's
but
not
wrong.
What it is.
No.
John Duffy in the studio, Dr. John Duffy. President Barack Obama got a little backlash from mentioning this gap year, didn't he?
He did. And it's kind of curious to me, like, where the judgment of this comes from, you know, because for those of us who know a little bit about gap years, it's usually you take a year and you kind of really immerse yourself in some interesting experience, some life experience that high school wouldn't provide you. And some kids do a gap year because they want that experience. Some do a gap year because they feel like, well, maturity-wise, I want another year under my belt before I do that college experience. And some kids say, like, when am I going to have the opportunity to do something really unusual like this again? So there's a lot of really cool, interesting reasons for doing this. But I also find that there's a lot of parental judgment around it. Like, your kid couldn't handle getting right into college, so you chose the gap year thing, you know?
What do other people care what you do with your kid? Why is this happening?
And why do we care what other people think about what we do with our kids?
That is the better question. Right? 'Cause it bugs me. I get texts, oh, you're a terrible mom. You know what? You love your kids. You do the best that you know how to do. How can that be bad?
It can't. You know, I am a big believer in kind of trusting your instincts regardless of what other people have to say, because we know our kids really well. And sometimes kids are drawn to something like this. I'll be curious to hear your thoughts, Bill. And it's something we parents don't even think of. And it's like, oh, I hadn't really thought of that. But if that's what you're drawn to, you know, like, I trust your instincts. That seems like a pretty good idea.
I was sure, John, when I went to school, that if someone had offered me taking a year off between high school and college, that I wouldn't have gone to college. I would have thought I could survive out in the world without taking college. I'll just I'll continue this.
That's what our parents made us think.
Well, I know myself to where I don't think I would have gone to college. But with Kylie, it really did. It changed her. It made her grow up. She was in Costa Rica for 6 weeks.
She had to grow up.
She did. She went to a foreign country where she didn't know anybody and barely spoke the language, and it changed her. And I'll tell you something that I wasn't expecting. She told me this was happening. I didn't think it would happen. Colleges really appreciated the fact that she got some life experience in. I didn't see that coming, but the fact that she did this opened up the eyes to several colleges going, we like that you did this. Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to a group of college admissions people not long ago, and I was talking to them, and then I asked them, what are you looking for? And the first thing everybody seemed to agree to was, don't bore me. Don't tell me about some lame club you did in high school once a week, you know. And a gap year is almost always a great story. I mean, like you said, Wendy, it's like this kind of trial by fire. You're gonna learn some life skills. You're going to be immersed in some different culture, undoubtedly, and do some kind of important work. And it's different. I think a generation ago, I don't think I would have gone to college either. But now I think it's part of the gap year idea is part of the culture. It's an idea that a lot of kids are considering who are very determined and absolutely college bound, you know?
I think that it's harder for a kid to go to a foreign country and be uncomfortable than it is going to a big university where there are other kids around. To me, that shows much more strength than going directly to college.
I agree. Think about the courage that takes, right?
I went to ISU for a semester. I couldn't cut the apron strings, let alone going to Guatemala or something.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. It's a good instinct that some kids have that, you know, and some kids recognize, boy, if I went to ISU for a semester, I don't know if that would work out. But if I really put myself out there and I don't really have the easy option of recoiling and coming back, I'm really going to do this. I'm really going to, you know, immerse myself in this. And then college might not seem so foreboding at all. It might be like, you know, oh, this is easier.
And you know what? That breather, that 1 year breather, even though she's not just laying around, I mean, she's working and she did go to another country for a while. She needed that. There are kids who just need that. There's a lot of pressure that senior year in high school and a lot of new pressure going into college. It wasn't a bad thing for her.
It's a regulatory thing, you know, and if you look at what kids do that make them successful, it's self-regulation. And if you recognize, college right now wouldn't suit me well. I've been, you know, the all the pressure that all my friends are going through, getting in and doing all this stuff and spending more time in school and classrooms right now, that doesn't sit well with me. So I'm going to regulate. I'm going to do something different. Something adaptive.
And you have to realize what's right for one kid is not necessarily what's right for another kid.
Absolutely. I mean, Bill, you've got twins, right? And they chose completely different paths as both of them seem to work, right? Yeah. You know, and that's a really important thing to recognize.
All right. Listener John is backing you, Bill, and you, Dr. John Duffy. Your son took a gap year, and then what happened?
Well, he took a gap year after college, and he went to China to get a job. He hasn't come back for the last 8 years. He's still there.
So it's a gap 8 years?
A gap 8 years. Yeah, he's teaching in Chinese schools.
Isn't that like a proud moment for you, though, to think, look what he's doing. He's making a difference, and he's following his passion.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I always have that parental concern about, okay, he hasn't paid into Social Security or a retirement fund.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's going to have to get started on that someday, and I don't know how that's going to work out.
Right. But in the meantime, it sounds like you're pretty proud of him for finding something that feels vocational for all this time, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We've been over to visit him a couple of times, and it's just amazing to see him do his work. So he's good.
Thank you for that lovely story. It's got to be your son is doing well in college, too, Dr. Duffy.
He is.
It's got to be such a proud moment to look at your little babies and you, Bill, too, where they're doing such wonderful things. It's got to be such a feeling of pride when you look at them standing on their own 2 feet.
Oh, sure.
There's no doubt about that, no matter what path they take. And to John's point, I've seen more and more kids in the last 5 years choose this gap year experience. Not once have I seen it break bad.
Really?
Where it wasn't a growth-oriented experience that fostered a really good college experience. John's experience is kind of unusual in that his son sounds like he really kind of embraced that experience and that became his vocation to some extent.
Yeah,
But even kids who come back and start school, you know, at 19 or 20 seem to do really, really well in the wake of a gap year. I think there's a lot of maturing that happens during that year.
Now, with our caller, he said his son did it after college. Is that still technically considered a gap year? Because once you graduate...
Right.
No, after 1 year of college, I thought he said.
I think he said in the middle of college, But some people are taking a year after college.
Yeah.
I think that's a different thing. You know, I think that's kind of like, you know, I'm going to backpack through Europe before I have to be a full-on adult.
Oh, that's so when that happens after
I think so,
college?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing that more often than that. So I think that there's a little different vibe there. There might be some learning affiliated with it, but I think it's different at 18 than it is at 22.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. Any quick answer on to how we stop this parental bullying? It's worse than kids bullying kids.
Yeah. I think part of it is paying attention to what's going on right now. To look at, like, I don't know if anybody's seen the comments toward, like, Malia Obama about, you know, and to think, like, well, here's a kid who's just trying to do what's right for her. And to your point, Wendy, we parents are all trying to do what's right for our kids, you know, and I've worked with hundreds of parents over the years. I've yet to meet somebody where I thought, oh, you're not really well-intentioned. You don't really care about the best interests of your kids. I haven't run into that very often, you know. So I think it's like kind of just respecting other people's paths and that it's not going to be linear. And I also encourage parents not to presume that what goes on behind the door that you think is perfect is really perfect. That nothing's perfect. No family's perfect. Everybody goes through their challenges. But
when your life is in chaos, you don't think that anyone else is going through what you're going through. And so, my life hasn't been in chaos, but there are families that have it.
Definitely.
And you think, oh, there's that one family who's they never fight. Everything's perfect. Dinner's on the table at 5 o'clock. The dog is freshly bathed. Is there any perfect household, really?
No. And wouldn't it be boring? You know,
yes.
And I mean that sincerely. Like, wouldn't that be a drab household? You know, like, I think that the challenges are part of what makes families, creates the fabric of a family and what makes them interesting. You know, a perfect household is way, way overrated. And I don't think it exists at all.
The Cleavers didn't have that much fun.
No.
Haskell was having fun.
The Haskell
family. You're absolutely
that's
right.
That's the place to be. That's Dr. John Duffy. Go to drjohnduffy.com. And again, his book is The Available Parent. Thank you, John. Great
Thank
to see you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a quick gap ourselves, and then Kim Gordon will give you the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.